Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com. And your support makes this possible.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Do you remember that quote from Mark Twain? Mark Twain said, "When I was a boy of 14, my father was so ignorant I could hardly stand to have the old man around. But when I got to be 21, I was astonished at how much the old man had learned in 7 years."
Yeah, funny how that works.
That is, we're going to talk today with Walt Mueller, who is the founder and president of the Center for Parent and Youth Understanding. And I think all of us admit that there's more that we can do in terms of understanding each other, kids to their parents to their kids, and maybe even grandchildren. There's a lot to be said there. Adolescence is that period of rapid change, someone said. Between the age of 12 and 17, for example, a parent can age as much as 20 years.
That's it. Oh, right, yeah.
And yours are, what the age of your?
Yeah, 15 and 13, so I'm right there.
You're right there.
I'm aging every second of the day.
Okay, all right. Well, comedian Doug Larson says, "Few things are more satisfying than seeing your children have teenagers of their own." So, we'll ask Walt about that. I was looking at a couple others. Irma Bombeck, "Never lend your car to anyone to whom you've given birth." This is kind of so. We'll get better advice as we go along here. Yeah. Dorothy Parker says, "The best way to keep your children at home is to make the home atmosphere pleasant and let the air out of the tires."
Right. That's right. Keep them at home.
Oh, sure. All right. Well, we'll end. I like this from Robert Fulghum. He was, remember, the guy who wrote Everything I Learned in Kindergarten.
Yeah. He
says, "Don't worry that children never listen to you. Worry that they're always watching you."
Mm.
Yeah, there's that. Well, school's back in session, so I want to be remembering to pray for teachers and pray for our kids as they adjust to that new world of challenge. And it's not any easier being a kid today.
No, it's not. You know, and I think especially as a Christian parent, you want the best for your kids and their faith walk, too. And those outside influences maybe ramp up when they're back at school with their peers around them and, you know, throwing social media and technology for an extra challenge, and here we go.
Well, we'll get to all of that today and more. Just to want to remind you that we're just a week away from our fall fundraiser here on Faith Radio. Fall Share gets underway next Tuesday, and your support is truly vital in helping this ministry to continue to grow and to see lives change through the relevant Bible preaching and the family-focused teaching and great interactive talk programs like Connecting Faith. And if you appreciate programs like this, I hope that you will make a connection with us next week. Or, of course, you can give online if you know you're going to be gone or you've got a moment and God's prompting you to give. We'd love to know that you're standing with us. You can make your gift online anytime at myfaithradio.com.
And technology has its upside, too. Our stream is very popular there. So welcome if you're listening on our stream right now. And help keep that going, too, by calling 877-93-FAITH. Press the number 3 or, as Neil said, myfaithradio.com.
Well, coming up in a moment, Dr. Walt Mueller, who has been working with youth in the youth ministry for over 3 decades, and we're just excited to have him with us to glean some insight about how we can better relate to our adolescents or our children at any age, really. And we'll get to that. Plus, a little later on in the program, we're going to hear a little bit more from Dr. Alan Cureton. We heard some thoughts from him earlier this week, the president of the University of Northwestern and Media. And we talked a bit about higher education with Dr. Cureton, and we'll hear some of his comments later in the show. But right now, a good word from John Stone Street to encourage us to encourage our kids not to give up.
Is your child ready to throw in the towel? For the Colson Center for Christian Worldview, I'm John Stone Street with The Point. Say your daughter's played the flute for years, but now she wants to quit, or your son has given up pursuing that track scholarship. We all want our kids to develop skills, build a college resume, and fulfill their commitments. So what do you do when they want to call it quits? How do you respond? Well, first, don't freak out. Nina Sovich writes in the Wall Street Journal that quitting one activity might kindle other passions. I know a young man who gave up on sports to become a leader in his church youth group. He also took up drawing and painting and is now the daily cartoonist for his college newspaper. And second, discern. If your child no longer enjoys an activity, find out why. If your son's schoolwork is suffering or he isn't getting enough sleep, something has to change. And finally, talk and pray with your child. List the pros and cons of moving on. Help them quit something well. Help your child make good decisions and use their talents wisely. The God who gave them those talents expects nothing less. With today's point, I'm John Stone Street.
Glad to have you listening to Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem, Ted Ross phones at the controls, and Carissa Rogers at the phones. And we look forward to hearing from you. You may have a question today as it concerns understanding and relating better to your teen, your child, your adolescent. We'd welcome you to join the program. We'll open up the phones right away at 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. Joining us today, Dr. Walt Mueller is the founder and president of the Center for Parent-Youth Understanding. It's a nonprofit organization serving schools, churches, and community organizations across the U.S., Canada, and worldwide in their efforts to strengthen families. And Walt's been working with youth and family ministry for over 37 years now. He's author of at least 9 books and a regular contributor to a number of journals and magazines, has a radio feature, and we're honored to have him with us back today. Walt, welcome back to Connecting Faith. It's been a long time.
Yeah. Hi, Neil. It's good to chat with you again.
The Center for Parent-Youth Understanding is committed to building strong families by serving to bridge the cultural generational gap between parents and teens. I guess that's probably always been there, but what does that gap look like maybe today compared to, say, 30 years ago?
Well, it's much wider, and part of the reason for that is, a big part of the reason is that culture is changing at a faster rate, at breakneck speed. I often say it's like a snowball when you were a kid. If you lived on a hill in a snowy area and you'd start a snowball and push it at the top of the hill, and eventually it could take on a life of its own and roll faster down the hill, picking up mass volume and speed. That's what culture is like, and so the rate of change, it has just been increasing. And if you add to that the fact that kids are dealing with the difficulties of life or the tough stuff that culture throws at them at younger and younger ages, we call that age compression, you realize that it's actually not just that the change is happening faster, but it's happening at younger and younger ages. So the kinds of things that past generations dealt with when they were 17 or 18 years old and a much different place developmentally than younger children, kids who are 6, 7, and 8 years old are now dealing with on a regular basis, and it makes it tough.
There's so much information out there. Your organization has been giving great resources over the years, so should we as parents be better equipped to understand what's going on in the lives of our teens, or are we maybe still as clueless as we've always been?
Well, I think a lot of that depends on the parent. I know there are a lot of parents who increasingly are concerned about kids. They see what's happening in the world. There are good things. There are difficult things, certainly. But in terms of the difficult things, they realize that the gospel, that our Christian faith speaks to those things. The culture is catechizing. I like to say it that way, educating our kids, shaping our kids 24/7. And certainly we need to step in, understand what the world is saying, what it's communicating, and then from the perspective of biblical truth, be able to affirm those things that the culture is getting right, but also be able to challenge those things that the culture is getting wrong. And so where parents step up and say, you know what, I see this as part of my responsibility, that's a good thing. But all too often we think, oh, those things aren't pressures that my kid's facing or my kids will never face. And that's really not a good notion or way to parent and live, because the reality is that wherever there are people, there is culture. And youth culture affects everybody, young and old alike. And our kids need us to step in and guide them through this soup, I like to call it the soup of youth culture, that they swim in every day.
You use the words affirm and challenge. That's maybe one of the tensions that we have to deal with, right? Because it's so easy to get maybe off on the pendulum swinging too far one way or the other.
Yeah, we can think that, it's just the culture's neutral, it's benign, kids are teenagers, there have always been teenagers, and, it's a stage, they'll get through it, everything will turn out all right. And when we do that, we forfeit our influence. And in fact, the scriptures teach us that we're supposed to be teaching and nurturing our kids 24/7. But if the pendulum swings to the other side, and we think that everything in culture is evil, we pull our kids out of the world, and that's exactly the place where Jesus prayed that his followers in all times and all places would be. In but not of the world. And so we need to, really be proactive in not only understanding the gospel, but understanding the cultural context in which we're called to live and equip our kids to live in that as well. So knowing the culture and speaking to the realities of the culture from a Christian perspective, that's not an option. It's necessary.
And I guess it means our responsibility as parents is to understand maybe a biblical framework for living our lives too, right? And that's probably one of the challenges.
Yeah, and this is one of the problems that we see, that by and large this problem of biblical illiteracy is now trickling down. And I know that a lot of the research is, you know, saying that kids today are biblically illiterate. That's accurate. But the research is also saying that one of the reasons for that is we've got a generation of parents who are so involved in other things, other pursuits, self-absorbed, whatever, even though they would call themselves Christian, we're not taking the time to nurture ourselves. And so we can't take our kids where we have not gone ourselves. And so one of the most important parenting responsibilities is to nurture our own selves, to be involved in learning from God's word, to sit under good teaching, to be in fellowship, to just continually be seeking the Lord and growing.
Talking today to Dr. Walt Mueller, who is the founder and president of the Center for Parent-Youth Understanding. And their mission is to help parents understand and respond to the complex world of their children and teens from a distinctly Christian point of view, to equip teenagers to deal with the challenges of adolescence and to raise the youth culture awareness of youth workers, parents, and educators, and helping them to increase their effectiveness with parents, children, and teens. And now, if you are in any one of those categories, today will be a helpful program for you. I want to encourage you to stay tuned and join the conversation. If you have a question, we appreciate the opportunity to talk to Walt, who has been leading and working in this area of youth ministry and family ministry for over 37 years. He's author of 9 books and contributes to another number of journals and magazines. He's with us today on Connecting Faith. Here's our phone number. If you have a question or comment, 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. It may be that kids came home from school just the other day, and you know, one of those early conversations, you realize that there's some challenges they're facing that you don't quite know how to respond to. Love to have you join in the conversation. 877-933-2484, and we'll continue. Dr. Walt Mueller in just a moment. Talking today about understanding the world that our kids are growing up in and how we can effectively parent. Dr. Walt Mueller is founder and president of the Center for Parent-Youth Understanding. He's been working with young people and families for over 37 years, and as a result of his work, Walt's become an internationally recognized speaker and author on contemporary youth culture. He's written extensively on youth culture and family issues, books like The Space Between, A Parent's Guide to Teenage Development. This is one that certainly is fitting today. Opie Doesn't Live Here Anymore, Where Faith, Family, and Culture Collide, and a number of others. Center for Parent Youth Understanding. Walt also has a radio spot called Youth Culture Today. And, Walt, I know that when you and I were growing up, there wasn't a lot of video game going on, and I'm not really following it today, but it does seem like kids are really kind of, they have sort of new obsessions. Maybe it's not video gaming, but it's just sort of being connected to their smartphone like it's an umbilical cord. What kind of influence do these, like social media and things like gaming, have on our kids today?
Yeah, well, there's a couple things to think about here. One is the amount of time kids spend with this. The most recent research, which came out a few months ago from an organization called Common Sense Media, says that teenagers spend about 9 hours a day engaged with screens, with media of some kind. This does not include time spent on a computer in school or at home doing schoolwork. So it would actually be more if they're engaging with a computer to do their homework. So there's a lot of time spent there. Now, just think about that for a minute if you want to think about influence. There's not a parent listening. There's not a youth worker listening. There's not a teacher listening. There's no one among us who is spending 9 hours of uninterrupted time engaged with the kids that we know and love on a daily basis. When you add those hours up, you begin to realize that with access to just about everything in terms of beliefs that then in turn guide behaviors, the things they will encounter will have a tremendous power to shape them. And all this is happening, Neil, in the context of a world where parents are more disengaged with their kids than perhaps before, or maybe not engaged with them in healthy, nurturing ways, and where parents are sometimes over-engaged with their own media as well. So we have these, you know, stereotypical pictures now and comics that come out in the newspaper that depict a family with children, and they're all present with each other physically, but, you know, emotionally detached because they're all engaged with their screens. And so life is being learned and being filtered through a few square inches of glass for several hours a day as kids engage with their smartphones. So whether you talk about social media and their posting and they're following other people, whether it be on things like Facebook or Snapchat or Instagram or any of the dozens of other social media platforms that are out there, or whether you're talking about video games or even television, which is still popular among kids. And just think about the plethora of options we have there compared to when you and I were kids, you know, and you basically could flip between four channels. That was my childhood. And I mean, it's just so there's so much out there that in the world of ideas, they're being exposed to anything and everything. And I'll just give you one little anecdote here. I was meeting with a group of educators locally here in Pennsylvania a couple of years ago, and they get together every month for dinner, and they have someone come in to address a topic. I was there to speak to them about youth culture. I go in every couple of years. And the dinner prior to, I was sitting with some folks I didn't know, and one of the guys, his name was Chris, I asked him what he did. He said, well, I'm a principal of a primary school. I said, primary school? What's a primary school? He said, well, that's third through fifth grade. So I took the opportunity. I said, Chris, now understand, Neil, this is 2 years ago. Chris, what percentage of your students that come to school third through fifth grade every day come to school with a smartphone that has their own smartphone that has unlimited internet access? And without hesitating, he said, 80%. So when you start to think about that, now that's not scientific, but we know that well over half of kids are engaged with their own cell phone, their own smart device, by the time they reach the age of 7. That's one of the latest statistics now. It's just over 50%. They're being exposed to all these ideas at such a young age with no adult standing in the gap to help them process and teach them this is appropriate, this is inappropriate, this is right, this is wrong. So the power has really increased on those things, which indicates to us, hey, we've got to get involved, set borders and boundaries, and know what they're doing when they're there. Monitor that.
We'll swing back to talk more about borders and boundaries, because that really is, that is staggering reality. You pair that with what we're learning about brain research, that our adolescent, the teen's adolescent brain isn't fully developed until their mid-20s. So, I mean, they're not necessarily even capable of making wise decisions all the time. That seems like kind of a recipe for danger.
Oh, absolutely. And this is where we say to parents all the time, when it comes to music, when it comes to media, when it comes to social media, you need to spend time with your kids there because you've got them. They're in your home, and this is a time to teach. You want to prepare them as Christian parents, for a life lived independently to the honor and glory of God. You want them to love, serve, and honor the Lord. And so what we need to do is take this opportunity. It's not once and done. It's a long process of thinking with our kids, processing with our kids, especially when they hit adolescence, these issues. You mentioned brain research, and you know, when I first started doing youth ministry, it was basically believed that by the time a young person looked like an adult in terms of stature, you know, 13, 14, 15 years old, their brain was fully formed. Now we know that it's not until about the age of 24 or 25 that the brain, as God has made it, is fully wired up, and the last part to get wired up is the frontal lobe, which is responsible for decision-making and impulse control, which explains a lot of why I was the way I was when I was a teenager myself. You know, when you think back on that, you know, it makes sense. You're going, maybe I wasn't so bad after all, but we make bad decisions. So, and here's the problem with Christian parenting sometimes. We just assume that our job is to think for our kids. And then when they get to the adult years and we release them into life, they're unable to really think for themselves because we haven't taken the time to think with them, to model good thinking Christianly. That's what I like to call it, thinking Christianly. So we tell our kids, you know, all the time, you know, and I tell parents this, you tell them, every decision you make, you're choosing sides. You drill that into kids. You're either going to make a decision that brings honor and glory to God, and you're going to make a decision that brings honor and glory to the things that the scriptures call the world, the flesh, and the devil. And every decision you make, not only are you choosing sides, but that decision sets the trajectory post-decision for the rest of your life. And we know that, you know, we as adults, we know that. We've made decisions in our lives that have had horrid consequences, and it's just one way to point our kids to understanding what wisdom is and making good decisions. And again, what I said earlier, we have to be immersed in the scriptures ourselves to know right from wrong and how to make good decisions ourselves if we're going to be able to teach our kids to do the same. So much out there that they face that it just makes it that much more difficult.
Well, can you, for a couple of minutes before our break, can you say a little bit more about what does it look like to think with them as opposed to think for them? Is there maybe another example? You talk about helping them understand that there's choices, but give us a little framework there.
Yeah, so for example, you know, if your child comes to you and says, "Hey, I heard this great song the other day on the radio," and or "I saw this music video online," you know, because they access a lot of music. Kids don't go to MTV to watch music anymore, by the way. There's just not a lot of music on there, so they access a music video, and you go check it out, and it's not something you want them listening to. It's something that does not bring glory to God. It's very negative in terms of its message. And you go to them and you say, "Shut that off. I don't want you listening to that anymore." Well, okay, maybe that's where you want to get, but that is thinking for. To think with would be to say, "Hey, you know what? You've listened to this. You've seen this. Let's look at it together." Now, that may freak them out when you do that, but then you sit and you talk. You ask questions. You know, what do you think about that? Do you understand the message here? What are they saying? What are they singing? What is this about? And it's a process of conversation where they get to see how to process things and then make good decisions on the information that they get as a result of processing. And so we actually have a tool here we call How to Use Your Head to Guard Your Heart, a little 3D guide where we teach parents how to teach kids to go through a three-step process to discover the worldview, discern how that measures up against Scripture, and then make a decision about whether or not this is something that I need to be listening to, watching, or involved in.
What's the best way to find out the resources at the CPYU?
Well, just go to our website, cpyu.org, and up on the top, I think you'll see a drop-down menu that says resources, and you'll see a drop-down menu that actually says store, and some of those resources are in those places as well. Most of the things we have are free, but there are certain things that we have to recover cost on, and that little 3D guide, How to Use Your Head to Guard Your Heart, is one of those things. Very inexpensive, but something that we've put together because we want to get that in the hands of youth workers, parents, and kids.
Great resources available, and Walt Mueller is a great resource with us today, and we got another 15 minutes or so with him. So if you have a question, I'd love to have you join in. Dr. Walt Mueller, founder and president of the Center for Parent Youth Understanding, cpyu.org is the website, and our phone number is 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. We're going to talk a little bit about YOLO. We'll learn what that is and about the Generation Me and more with Dr. Walt Mueller coming up in just a moment. So stay tuned to Connecting Faith. Helping our kids, our children and teens understand who they are and who God designed them to be, and living life from a Christian point of view. That is at the heart of the Center for Parent Youth Understanding. It was founded by Dr. Walt Mueller some 37 years ago. He's been working with young people and families and speaks extensively internationally. He's written a number of books, including 99 Thoughts for Parents of Teenagers and The Space Between, A Parent's Guide to Teen Development, and I Want to Talk with My Teen about movies, music, and more. And we're talking about all things adolescence today with Walt, and glad to have him with us here on Connecting Faith. And you know, just maybe let's just jump in talking a bit about identity, because it does seem like the whole area of sexual identity and sexual activity is what the media portrays as the primary conversation issue today. Is that something that our kids are really wrestling with, and what kind of advice do you have?
Yeah, Neil, it's interesting. We've been tracking with this for a while because this is an area of culture that's just unfolding so quickly. And anybody who has conversations with kids or with youth workers who are engaged with kids or teachers and people on school boards who have to deal with policy issues, this is a huge, huge issue in terms of sexuality. And what we're moving from is a design and order for sexuality that when we go back to Genesis 1 and 2, we see that God made sex, made sexuality, made gender, declared all of this good. It's a wonderful thing. The problem is that many are growing up in the church, or many have grown up in the church, and it was not something that was talked about. And so because it was not talked about or it was shunned, they either think that it's a negative thing and a bad thing that God looks down on, and we don't talk about those things, or we come to a conclusion that it's just antiquated. Anything that the church has to say is so negative and old-fashioned that it doesn't apply today. Well, the culture is talking about these things, and people have struggled with these issues for a long time. And so I think what we need to do when we talk about sex and sexuality and identity is go back. Always start with Genesis 1 and 2. God's shalom, you know, what he intended for humanity in terms of flourishing in the garden when things were the way they were supposed to be. And then by living in a post-Genesis 3:6 world where people and institutions and our sexuality has fallen, we can always interpret what is happening in our culture through eyes of what should be happening. So the things that are not the way they're supposed to be, we're able to judge in light of the way things are supposed to be. I found that to be a very helpful way to talk about sex and sexuality with not just kids but adults as well, because there's a lot of confusion there. But the culture is talking about it, and this is where I think as parents and as youth workers, we need to tune in to what the culture's saying, because we live in a hypersexualized world where, again, in terms of sexuality, there are no borders and boundaries. And certainly it's moved now to identity where a binary understanding of gender, male and female, there's everything in between and outside, and it's very fluid. And I think that kids, just real quickly, I think that kids who may have never thought about these things before, because they're at a point where they're reaching puberty, God designed them for this, and they have some questions about what's happening to their body and within themselves and the new feelings that they have in terms of their sexuality, hearing about and seeing and being encouraged to experiment or dabble with all these new and different options is encouraging kids who normally wouldn't have to deal with these things or even think about these things to start to do that. And so this is where I think we need to go back, and biblical sex education has to start at a very young age. We don't wait till kids are struggling to talk about what a proper biblical view of sexuality is. We start young, so we build a foundation so that when the questions and the feelings and the changes come, they're able to process that. And there's even an openness that we've created to talk about these things with our kids.
Well, I guess probably even in general across the board, whatever the cultural issue might be, starting earlier is probably something that we as parents need to get wise to, right? I mean, third grader has a screen already, then we better be aware.
Exactly. You know, one of the things we tell parents is with anything you find, with any, and we do this here at CPYU, with any new cultural trend we find, we not only want to understand it, but we want to look at how God may call us to respond to it. And there's really three levels of response. And as soon as we're aware of the trend, we have to start to engage at all three levels. The first, which is often forgotten, is the prophetic level. And what I mean there is, you know, basically, you know, don't wait for God to speak. God has spoken already. What do the scriptures say about this issue? What can we take from the scriptures that speak to this issue? So, for example, with social media and the problem of narcissism and idolatry and, you know, being addicted to our screens, the scriptures speak to all those things. I mean, in many ways, they become a god. So we speak to that prophetically. With sexuality, we want to talk about what the scriptures say about God's order and design for sex. The second level is the preventive. Now that we know that these pressures are out there, that these messages are out there, that these trends exist, if there is a trend that I want to keep my kids from going down that road, I want to start to enlist preventive strategies. So, for example, you mentioned social media or cell phones. Why in the world would we put a cell phone, a smartphone, with the ability to take, then send and receive photographs in the hands of a child that is 6, 7, 8, 10, even 12, 13 years old? Because with the problem of sexting and not just the moral issues, but the legal issues related to that, I mean, we're just setting them up for trouble and failure. So there's preventive steps we can take. And then lastly, the redemptive. So we have the prophetic, the preventive, and the redemptive. And that's when we intervene when someone has made a decision that's gotten them in trouble. And all too often in the church, we ignore the trends. And by ignoring the trends, we ignore our responsibility to speak the prophetic and enact the preventive. And then we're forced into the redemptive mode. And sometimes it's too late. And I would say it's never too late for God's grace. We can't out-sin God's grace, and our kids need to understand that. But that's when parents lament the fact, why didn't I know about this? Why didn't I do something about this? Why didn't we talk about this when the kids were younger?
Good words. Prophetic, preventive, redemptive, three levels of response. I notice you have a conference coming up or a seminar, and you're dealing with the acronym YOLO, which is not something that many of us maybe are aware of. So say more about YOLO.
Yeah, YOLO, YOLO, the acronym is You Only Live Once. And it really is a philosophy of life where you say, hey, expressive individualism, I'm myself, I'm going to be the ruler of myself, I'm going to express myself in the moment, I want to express myself however I want to express myself, I'm going to experience what I want to experience because, hey, after all, life is short. It's that old, we read about this in the scriptures, eat, drink, and be merry because tomorrow we die. And so we want to grab for it all now while we're alive. And this is life lived in an idolatrous way under one's own self and one's own lordship rather than under the lordship of Christ. And so what we're doing with this conference is we're springing off of that and talking about reclaiming the soul of 21st century kids and looking at some of the key issues that kids are dealing with in today's culture. Things like social media, things like the gender issue, which we just talked about, all kinds of different things. And pornography is another one that we will talk about that. How to work through music and media. How do we teach them to make good decisions, which you and I just talked about a little while ago, and get them away from this sort of haphazard, cavalier attitude of, my only responsibility is to do whatever I want to do or whatever I feel like doing. There are no consequences. I just run with my emotions.
The generation me, I guess. There's a lot of that today, isn't there?
Well, yeah, and that's just not limited to one generation. This is what got us in trouble in the first place back in the garden. We think we can control things, and the basic problem with kids, the most basic fundamental problem is the same problem we all have, and that's our sin and our brokenness. And so, our desire to do our own thing. It's just that in today's world, it may look a little different or a lot different than it did for past generations, but we've all had to struggle with this. And certainly that, looking out for number one and, hey, it's all about me, that's not discouraged in today's world. That's actually propagated, and that's why we need to go back to the scriptures and let our kids see what it means to live under the lordship of Jesus Christ.
A little bit earlier, we were talking about issues of screen time and things, and you mentioned we need borders and boundaries. So say a little bit more about that. What would be some practical things that parents can do, whether it's in the issue of social media or other areas? How do we go about building that kind of framework?
Yeah, well, the first and most important thing is through your own example. So the way that a mom or a dad uses social media is the best way to teach. And so you don't want to be talking about yourself. I mean, I find it crazy that we post all these things. And I say to people, the next time you're ready to post a photo or post something, imagine walking out in front of your house or walking down the street and knocking on the neighbor's doors and showing them the photo or just screaming what you're going to put out there, you know, and say with a photo, say, hey, look at this, like me, like this. And we start to see how ridiculous some of these things are. And so I think we need to implement borders and boundaries, not just for how much time we spend on these devices, but what we do when we're on there. And one of the things we've done, Neil, is we actually have a digital kids initiative through CPYU. There's a whole site we have. You can get to it through our main site, cpyu.org. And we have put together all kinds of free resources and handouts that set some of these borders and boundaries, including a digital covenant of conduct, which has a whole list of parameters that parents can institute. You know, use as much of it as you want. Tweak it, change it. We don't care. But just set up some borders and boundaries for healthy youth use. One of the things is don't bring cell phones to a table. Simple little thing, but people do that. You know, when you're with other people, be present with them, not present with whoever's on the other side of the screen.
Do we, when it comes to maybe disciplining, or let's use the, cell phone, somebody's caught using technology past the allotted time, or we had a technology-free night or something, and it didn't work out well. How do we respond?
Well, look, as parents, I don't see anything wrong with saying, you know what, if you cross the lines, we're going to pull back a little bit here. So you take it away. You know, one simple thing to do, and again, this is another important border and boundary, is don't let kids sleep with their cell phones. Kids need 9 hours and 15 minutes of uninterrupted sleep for healthy growth and development. And kids are now sleeping the great majority. We're up well over 95% of kids with phones are sleeping with their phones, and that means they're not getting sleep. They don't want to be left out of anything. They don't want to miss anything. They want to be there for their friends when they need them. Hey, what you need is sleep. And when kids aren't sleeping, this actually contributes to depression. And we know that depression is on the rise among young people as well for numerous reasons, but this could be one of them, just a little practical reality that kids are not sleeping for nine hours and 15 minutes a night in an uninterrupted way. So when those rules are broken, that's when you remove, as my dad used to say, privileges come with responsibility. And if you forsake your responsibilities and cross the borders and boundaries, we're going to pull back on the privileges. I think parents are afraid to do that now, but we need to do that. And our kids will appreciate it in the long run.
Well, Walt, we appreciate you for the short time we've had, and I look forward to having you back with us again, because there's so much more information as we try and navigate these interesting times we live. And I want to encourage your listeners to go to cpyu.org to find the whole host of resources available there. And, Walt, we so appreciate your leadership and your wisdom in this area.
Thank you. Thanks so much for the opportunity to chat. It's been good talking with you again.
Dr. Walt Mueller is the founder and president of the Center for Parent and Youth Understanding. Find out more online at cpyu.org. And a lot of our conversation today has been about just giving some wise advice, and thought this song would kind of help solidify that thought about how we could kind of do a little reflecting back to our kids.
Dear younger me, where do I start? If I could tell you everything that I have learned so far, then you could be one step ahead of all the painful memories still running through my head. I wonder how much different things would be, dear younger me. Some speech about how to get the most out of your life, or do I go deep and try to change the choices that you'll make, cause they're the choices that made me. And even though I love this crazy life, sometimes I wish it was a smoother ride, dear young.
Fall too hard, so fast, so far that you can't get back when you're lost.
And I don't know how your parenting is going, but to know that, you know, God still has his grace, there's no limit to that. And a good word today from Dr. Walt Mueller's Center for Parent Youth Understanding. We got some thoughts from Dr. Alan Kiraton coming up, but maybe a quick takeaway.
Yeah. Well, that song ties right in with the third step of what he offered. I really appreciated breaking it down to prophetic and then preventive, but then redemptive, because our kids are going to make mistakes. I did when I was a kid, and that redemptive piece is so important, so huge.
I thought it was such an important conversation, and just a reminder that we need to step in the gap and clarify things, affirm what the culture is getting right, but also be willing to challenge what they're getting wrong and speak truth to our children and guide them in the right way.
Yeah. And he talked about, you know, biblical literacy trickles down, so let's make sure we're getting in the word as well. Some good words today from Dr. Walt Mueller. Hey, we want to get to some comments, conversation I had just not long ago with Dr. Alan Kiraton, president of the University of Northwestern in Media. We talked about a number of things. One of them was about, you know, raising up the next generation of leaders and men and women of character.
What we're trying to do at Northwestern, whether it be through the university or even over the airwaves, is that we want to teach people about a biblical worldview and then in the quest to reach others with the good news. I tell students that are, that, you know, the 18 to 24-year-olds that come to campus, and I tell them and their families, look, Northwestern's not a bubble. Northwestern's a harbor. And ships must come into a harbor to be retooled, refitted, and loaded up again to go back out to sea. The time at Northwestern for a student during those two or three or four years that they're here is for us to prepare them to go out into the sea of life where storms happen and ships aren't built to stay in the harbor. They're built to be out at the open sea. And so we want our students to be out in the open sea, but they need to be in this harbor this time so we can prepare them for, and you and I both know this, Neil, we've lived long enough, there are storms in life, and you've got to be able to weather those storms. And people are going to question your integrity. They want to know what you stand for and what you believe in. And we want our students, our graduates, to be leaders. And that's our mission statement in the home, church, community, and world. We want our listeners to be able to use our time when they're listening to us on the air as their harbor time so that when they go and engage in work in the marketplace or when they're taking care of their children or when they're meeting in a community setting, they can be salt and light and know how to be salt and light. You know, that's our call. And I think there's going to be a need for it. You know, my mantra is that we want to engage culture. We want to redeem it and claim it for Christ. And we can't do that when we disengage and disassociate. We've got to be in the arena. As Teddy Roosevelt said, you got to be down in the arena fighting. You know, if you got to be down in the arena making a difference. And that's what Christ tells us to do. Get in there and do something. Claim it for Christ and be salt and light.
Dr. Alan Kiraton is with us today. We're talking about higher education and about some of the challenges facing higher education. Give us a sense, maybe in general, higher education in general, what's your sense of the health and strength of this sector of our society, and then maybe specifically Northwestern? What's the health and strength looking like at Northwestern?
Well, Neil, I'm in my 37th year working in American higher education, and I firmly believe that our system is the best in the world. I'm biased. I want you to know that. But I also think we have challenges. And one challenge is that we've established a system that protects tradition. In other words, it's a system that's geared up for faculty, by faculty, to protect faculty. And really what it needs to be about is the transformation of our students, of individuals that come in. And we need to change and adapt. And you know, you've heard my mantra here on campus. The why doesn't change, but the how does. The why for us is sticking to our mission, who we are as a Christ-centered institution. But how we do it has to change as time changes, as culture changes, and we adapt, but the why doesn't change. So I'll give you an example. We don't teach at Northwestern the way that you taught back in 1614. You know, everybody doesn't have to take Latin. Everybody doesn't have to take Greek. That curriculum was decided for you and determined for you as you were heading into, if you would, to be a clergy, to be a member, a pastor someplace. So we've adapted and changed over time. But there is such a strong, strong element of political correctness within American higher education, especially in the faculty ranks, that you cannot, if you have a different viewpoint atmosphere that's on these, you are ostracized. You cannot be a conservative on many of these campuses that talk about, you know, being open-minded and being tolerant, and they're unbelievably intolerant if you don't agree with them. It's sad because this the academic community, the university should be a battleground of ideas and thoughts and perspectives, and we should debate those and discuss them and dialogue on them. But right now what it is that if you don't agree with me, you're wrong and I'm shutting you out. And it's disappointing because as intellectuals, as part of the intelligentsia, we need to be talking about ideas and not being so reactive and taking it as a personal attack on ourselves. But here again, that's human nature. You know, human nature, you know, it's not that people are against me. It's just I'm for myself, you know, type of thing. Yeah.
Northwestern's still growing strong, though.
Yeah. You know, it's really amazing that God continues, as you've heard me say, crush us with his generosity and his blessings. And we just keep growing and opportunities keep coming. And I think it's because we're honoring what he has planned and intended and purposed for Northwestern for these last 114 years. We're not wavering from who we are. We're adapting in regards to how we deliver, but we're not wavering from who we are at all. And we're not going to on my watch, and the Board of Trustees are deeply committed to protecting that mission. And that's what they should be doing.
Before we let you go, I want to say a word to parents maybe who have sent their students off perhaps for the first time this fall, and maybe just challenge the students to as you walk around campus. They all have big hopes and dreams, or just want to know if there's a good food service.
Yeah. Well, first of all, to the parents, what I would say is keep praying for your child, or if you're a grandparent, keep praying for your grandkids. Secondly, let them, if you can, let go of them. That umbilical cord called a cell phone is unbelievable. I mean, students, it's not unusual for me to hear students connecting with their parents every day, if not multiple times a day. You just got to say, you know, let it go. Thirdly, if the student has a problem on campus, ask them the simple question, what are you going to do about it? You know, put it back on the responsibility of the student. So that's just some parental kind of advice that I would say. To the student, I would say, you know, engage and get involved. You know, I keep saying to students, get involved, get involved. You know, if you stand off to the side and don't get involved and stay back in your residence hall room or in your apartment off campus and play games and get absorbed into your computer, you know, interact with people. Get out there and interact. Even if it's for any of the introverts, it's tough. You know, keep get involved. And really, that's what life's all about. We want you to get involved and get involved in your church, get involved in a club on campus, get involved with classmates. You know, if you're into sports, music, you know, work, get involved. You know, that type of thing. So that's what I would say to a student. And you know, looking back on it now, I wish I would have studied more. I always ask students, "Are you studying? Are you studying? Yeah. Are you studying?"
Yeah.
They kind of chuckle when I ask them that.
Yeah, we could all look back on that, I think. Just a final word. How could we pray for you and for presidents of Christian colleges around the nation?
You know, when people ask me that, I always say, please, if you pray for me, and I'm very grateful that you do, that God would bestow his wisdom upon me. So, you know, it's a request that Solomon made. Lord, I need your wisdom. I need your discernment. Keep me protected as I lead. And protected against, you know, my own vanity as well as things that come at me. So, you know, those are the three things I would say for any university president that's leading a faith-based institution that's committed to Christ. You know, that's the tough part.
Well, and these are challenging days, as I'm sure they have been in the past, but it seems more so, maybe a little more intense. The lines become maybe more blurred, so opportunity for light to shine brighter in the darkness.
Yeah, but there's no greater opportunity than what we have now. Yeah. I just think, you know, to be able to reach the world for Christ right now, I mean, we have wonderful opportunities that we've never had before in any previous generation. We need to take advantage of it.
Dr. Alan Cureton, president of the University of Northwestern, St. Paul, and we're honored to have you in studio today. Thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you, Neil.
All right. Glad to have you listening in today on Connecting Faith. You missed part of the show. We'll post the interviews online at myfaithradio.com. Click on the Connecting Faith show page at myfaithradio.com. And look forward to having you back with us tomorrow on Connecting Faith. Tomorrow, it's Invisible Wounds by author Melinda Means, the Friday installment.